Well, Nick, losing a series to the Chicago White Sox, the worst team in the American League by win-loss record, is not something I think many people, scratch that, anyone who watched or listened to this game thought was possible before, of course, the series started. I'm guessing no one had that on their bingo card, and yet that is the reality. I laughed to keep myself from being really frustrated. But the Blue Jays, with a frustrating game today, right? A ton of self-inflicted wounds. Whether it's missed opportunities on offense or with the bullpen, they lose 4-2 to the visiting White Sox. They lose the series. They fall to 41-36 on the season. And I mean, look, you knew we were going to have this chat after what went down in the eighth inning. You knew this is where we were going to start, so we might as well start now. But I think it might be time to at least have a conversation about Yariel Rodriguez getting some closing opportunities. Or at the very least, the bulk of the closing opportunities not specifically going to Jeff Hoffman. I know he was brought in to be the closer, but I'm not sure anyone is filled with an overabundance of confidence when he enters these games. And I think a lot of people, maybe outside of us, have been there for quite a while. But and you're not going to win too many games when you only score two runs. We'll get to the offense certainly as well. But I think your tweet post-game was spot on when you said the Hoffman conversation is going to dominate headlines today, I'm afraid.
Yeah, there are certain things you can see them coming down the highway, and the Jeff Hoffman thing is a good example of that. Now, there are two ways to look at this as far as I'm concerned. You could say, if you want to be generous, and I don't think people want to be generous right now, if we're going to be completely honest, the Blue Jays just dropped a series to a team that was 7-31 on the road entering the series, and only had one road series win all season. So again, people aren't feeling particularly generous at this moment, but you might say Hoffman came in, he walked a guy, and then he got a weak contact that should have been an out, and chances are he's closing out the game and everything's fine and it's not a discussion point. On the other hand, the reason why that soft contact did not result in an out was his own fielding blunder. Now, again, it's not like this is a known problem with him. It's not like Hoffman is constantly misfielding balls. He hasn't committed an error since 2022, so this is not really part of what's been going on with him. It is a bit of a freak occurrence. But when things go wrong, you also have to adapt and make the best of the situation. And he could have shut the door from there, kept the game tied. And the reality is he just did not look like a good high leverage reliever in this game. He was consistently getting to a two strike count, but he could not put anybody away. 11 of his 21 pitches came with two strikes, no strikeouts. His velocity was down. His fastball was sitting more closer to 95 when you like to see it sort of 96, 97. That's troubling with him. He's not going to miss those bats if he doesn't have his top notch heat. And the command was off. You know, Alejandro Kirk actually could have ended up being an unsung hero in that inning because
he was moving all over.
Yeah,
he was corralling
some pitches that were wild pitches in reality, even if they weren't wild pitches in the official scorecard because of the work that Kirk was doing back there. So I understand the frustration with Hoffman because there's no way in this game that he looked like the closer that the Blue Jays have paid for. Where you want to go in the future, that's an interesting discussion, right? Yariel Rodriguez came into this game, 16 of his last 17 outings have been scoreless, and 11 of those were more than one inning as well. He doesn't have maybe quite the same strikeout stuff as Hoffman, but he's been lights out and does look like a viable option if the Blue Jays are going to make a move. I'm not sure we're at that point right now, even if it certainly could feel that way. But if nothing else, if you want to be slightly positive, the Blue Jays do have an option that they can go to if they start to lose confidence, Hoffman, because Rodriguez does look like a viable closer candidate.
You're listening to Jays Talk, of course. That's Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. We're live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call. You guys know the drill. 416-870-0590. 1-888-660-590. *590 on your cell. You can text us as well. 590-590. Name and location. A whole whack of text here already. We will certainly get to as many of them as possible. The People's Text Line always open. Standard messaging and data rates may apply. Yeah, I do think it's going to be a tough pill to swallow anytime you lose a series, doubly so when you do it with your closer on the mound, and triply so when the team you're playing are the Chicago White Sox, right? I mean, look, I do still think, to your positive note, and we're probably not going to be a lot positive today. This is probably the
get it out of the way early.
Use it now. They are still playing, sitting in a playoff spot, the Blue Jays, despite the loss. And you had brought this up yesterday. They didn't get their 40th win of the season last year until after Canada Day. So, like, I think you take the win-loss record, but that is still, no matter what, an ugly way to lose a ball game to a bad team, frankly, right? Especially in the day off tomorrow, but essentially 10 straight games against playoff teams. And after tomorrow, your next day off isn't until July 10th. You have a lot of baseball in front of you, right? Yeah, and then you have the day off tomorrow, 3 in Cleveland, 3 in Boston, both teams that are playing well. The Red Sox have started to play a little bit better, which I'm not sure a lot of people would have tabbed after a Rafael Devers trade. But the Devers trade itself came on the heels of them sweeping the Yankees. So you have those guys. And then speaking of the Yankees, you have 4 at home over the Canada Day festivities to take on the division-leading Yankees here at the Rogers Centre, right? So it's just it's a failed, missed opportunity to gain some sort of momentum heading into a 6-game road trip and then welcoming in the Yankees at home. It's just – it is tough. But to your point about Hoffman, I mean, yeah, wasn't locating particularly well. The velo was down. I mean, he got worked essentially for 21 pitches in 3 runs in the span of a time it took him to get just one out, right? And again, that's not going to necessarily show up on the box score because I think Brendan Little took the loss today, ultimately, which is kind of too bad for him because he got 2 quick outs and then, of course, 2 runners get on, which is the point they go to Hoffman. But yes, the fielding error on the Benintendi grounder was not great, but just that it took him 21 pitches to ultimately get one out, I mean, that's just not something that I think fills you with confidence going forward, given that his ERA has become even more inflated, and it already began today with a 5.
There were things you might have been able to say heading into this game where there's reason to believe that Hoffman's going to be better, and he probably will be better just because the bar he set is pretty low in terms of keeping runs off the board, which is the basic component of his job, keep runs off the board. So you can quote any stat you want, the underlying numbers, how many strikeouts, how few walks, whatever you want to say, the reality is his job is to keep runs off the board because he enters the game at a moment where the team simply cannot afford to give up a run.
Yeah.
So in that sense, he has been failing for the vast majority of the season. Now, he started incredibly well, and then he had one very rough stretch, and so it hasn't been like he's been consistently poor in his role. It's more that he had one really bad stretch, and he's had a hard time kind of recovering from that. But you would have been able to say, heading into this game, okay, his strikeout rate would be a career high. His walk rate is under control. And the thing that had really hurt Hoffman this season had been the home runs. He'd been giving up way more home runs than you think for a guy who barely did it over the last 2 years in Philadelphia, where we need to remind everyone, he was really one of the best relievers in all of baseball. There's a reason the Jays went out and got this guy. He had been a relief ace for the Phillies, even if he hasn't always been in the role of closer. And then suddenly this season, there's a bunch of home runs going over the wall. And I think the way the Blue Jays saw it is, you know, that's a little bit of a fluky thing. Sometimes that's a hitter just does a good job. You tip your cat. Sometimes that's the wind, the conditions, you're in the wrong ballpark at the wrong time. We generally don't judge pitchers solely on how many home runs you give up. And that was really the only thing that was going wrong for Hoffman over the course of most of the season. But in an outing like today, there are just many more things you can point to, whether it was the command, whether it was the velocity, whether you want to call a fielding error, you know, a lack of composure, however right. You want to conceptualize that. This particular outing, I think, is a lot more worrying than some of the other outings where things have gone wrong, but you haven't necessarily been provided with reasons to believe that they would go wrong in the future.
Yeah, I think if this was a one-off blip, people would still be upset, but you think to yourself, all right, like, you know what, it happens. Every closer gets got eventually. No one's going to give up no runs for the rest of time, but this is not the first time, or the second time, or the third time, which I think is why we're getting these kinds of texts. We're going to go to the phone lines in a sec, but I do want to read some of these texts that came in right at the end of the game. Isaac and Victoria, regardless of the error, 20 pitches to get one out against the White Sox. Hoffman should be out as closer. Ian in London, Ontario, texting in before the game is over, but Hoffman unable to perform, resulting in coughing up a lead to not the most intimidating lineup. When is Jimmy Garcia getting back? Which, as I understand, Jimmy Garcia is going to be back like relatively soon. I want to say we'll probably get some more updates on that either tomorrow or Tuesday. But last I could, if I remember correctly, let me just look at my notes here. Jimmy Garcia, this was from earlier in the series through a live BP. He will get into rehab games this coming week. So there you go. Probably not that far away from Jimmy returning, but that does answer Ian's question to a certain extent. Bruce from New Brunswick, how many times do we have to watch Jeff Hoffman implode on the mound before the Blue Jays remove him from the closer role? Yariel Rodriguez should be this team's closer. As a Jays fan, I have zero confidence in Hoffman. I am a very frustrated fan. Randy in Ontario, pathetic outing, all in caps. I think poorly of John Schneider for pulling Little in the first place. Let's see. Trisk from Kitchener, do you think the Jays are waiting for Jimmy to come back before trying something different in the closer role? The Hoffman experience needs to take a break. There's a lot of these. Let's put it that way. We can get to many of these texts, and I'm sure we'll get to many of them on the phones as well. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. A theme today, I think.
I've got a feeling that no shortage of texts overall and quite a bit of repetition in terms of the content of the text based on that little snippet, but I think what you're going to see roll through. One thing I did want to briefly touch
sure.
on that
yeah,
was
yeah.
mentioned there is the managerial decision, because that is part of it to some extent. Now, I get that the Jays are approaching an off day, so they think, okay, we can have Hoffman go a little bit longer, for instance, because he'll be able to get rest on Monday. It's not a big deal. And Little had put a couple guys on base, although, you know, he'd struck out a couple guys as well. So you could sort of interpret that the way you want to. The thing that's a little bit interesting to me is that before this game, Jeff Hoffman had never registered a save of more than 3 outs in his entire career. So I'm not saying it's something he would be mentally incapable of doing, but you are putting the player in a situation that maybe they're not totally comfortable or super familiar with, and that's something that you could argue is an unforced error on Schneider's part. Would it have made a difference if he'd come out fresh in the ninth? I don't know, because the stuff just didn't look good today, but it is a little bit of a footnote on this outing that's probably going to get passed by in all of the vitriol directed at Jeff Hoffman.
I will say, I think for me, if I was going to nitpick a little bit with John Schneider's usage of pitchers today, it's not really about Chris Bassitt. I think I largely understood taking Bassitt out. I think you could have asked for one more inning from Bassitt and probably would have been fine. But, you know, the middle of the order was coming up. I'm not going to quibble with that too much. I do think, especially with the off day tomorrow, you could have asked for more from Yariel Rodriguez. I do think that. I mean, he is a guy. You just talked about Hoffman not necessarily having had a save of more than 3 outs.
Yeah.
Was that it? So we've not seen a lot of saves necessarily from Yariel Rodriguez because he hasn't been given those opportunities. But in terms of just outings of more than 3 outs, we have seen that quite a lot in a pretty short period of time last year, this year for Y-Rod. I mean, my note right here in my little Word doc, when they went to Little, and I do like Little, don't get me wrong. Little has been very effective for a good chunk of this year. But when they went to Little after, 10 pitches from Yariel Rodriguez, my note literally just reads, "No more Y-Rod? ? I think he could have come back out for the eighth. And if only to give Brendan Little just a little break, essentially, right? This was his 36th appearance of the season. That is, he is on track for an insane amount of work this year, something that's probably not sustainable. And now, he was effective enough, Little, right? He got the 2 quick outs. He showed off the knuckle curve. But I don't know. I think you can ask for more from Yariel Rodriguez. And for me, I mean, if I'm asking for more at this point, I think I might be asking him to be the closer at least for a little while.
Yeah, and again, it does feel like Schneider was managing into the off day. Like, that felt very much at the top of his mind with the moves he was making. He's probably thinking, why do I need to push Yariel in any way, because I can feel free to use as many pitchers as I want because I don't have to worry about the ramifications the next day. But sometimes thinking beyond the game is not beneficial. You got to win the game that's in front of you.
Yeah.
And as you mentioned, Yariel had only thrown 10 pitches. He's very comfortable going multi-innings. And I thought that the splitter he got Kyle Teal on was one of the best splitters I've ever seen from him. Like, his stuff, you know, the exact opposite of Jeff Hoffman today, where the stuff looked significantly worse than usual. I thought Y-Rod's stuff looked better than usual, and that's an interesting thing to say about a guy who's been shutting down the entire league for multiple months at this point. So I'm with you there. I think it would have been the easy thing to do is just kind of, as the manager, put your feet up and say, I'm just going to let this guy cook because that has been working for me basically since the beginning of May.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's get to the phones. Let's start with Russ in New Jersey. Russ, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
How are you? You know, I called you guys last week, and I said before on Sunday, I said, I don't think it's too much to ask for 5-1, but it's hard to sweep the series. You go 4-2, and, you know, they went 3-3. Now, if you look at it, the six games, they blew them out two games. They got blown out really two games. I know they came back a little bit, you know, the day, and then they had one game that they could have easily lost, which they pulled out the ninth inning with the Bichette and Barger back-to-back, and then today you lose a game, and they, you know, as you guys said, the White Sox lineup doesn't have Harold Baines or Frank Thomas or Robin Ventura in that lineup. You know what I mean? So I will say like this. I think this series, people have to understand, is a big series against Cleveland. Cleveland's a team that you're going to be battling out for a playoff spot probably. Detroit's going to win that division. You lost two out of three to them early in the year with that grand, especially that grand slam game in the ninth inning. You know, who's a Schneeman, whatever his name is, hit the grand slam for we lost. And I think it's a big series. If he can pull two out of three, then even the season series, and then you go to other tiebreakers, which is interdivision, which happens to be Cleveland's, like, doing really, really well. But it's a big series for the Jays. You know, I know everyone picks on the Blue Jay manager, and you could nitpick here and there. The White Sox manager almost gave us the game today. In the bottom of the seventh inning, you have Bichette on second base. And I called this week earlier, but early in the week, Arizona did the same stupid thing. You have Bichette on second base, and you have one out. And you have Vladdy Guerrero. And the guy's hitting like 350 with runners in scoring position. And I know Kirk's had a good year. But first of all, Kirk's a good double play guy. And he pitches to Guerrero. Now, Guerrero worked out a walk on six or seven pitches. And then Kirk hit the ground ball. But who does it? I sometimes don't understand these managers. How do you not walk Guerrero in that situation? Especially you have one out. Okay, I would do with two outs, but you have one out, and you have Alejandro Kirk at the plate who ground balls a double play, and he hit the ground ball. Now they threw it at home, and then he had to get Lucas, you know, after that. But I thought the White Sox manager almost tried to hand us the game today in the seventh inning. I just didn't understand how he managed that point.
Hey, Russ, appreciate the call as always, man. Thanks for joining us here on JSOC. It's true. I mean, there were a lot of moments, I think, for both teams in this game, Nick, where you could have pointed at that being the turning point, essentially, right? And I think what Russ just brought up could have been one. It did not end up being one. And there was a moment earlier in the ball game where Vladdy, with the bases loaded, grounded out. And my note here was, I'm sure everyone will react rationally to that.
I was anticipating some calls on that. I was readying.
I'm sure we all got some. I'm sure there's still time, right? And the truth is, it did end up mattering, right? I'm not going to put it all on Vladdy in that one AB, but you're going to get a lot of texts and messages, and I don't think it's entirely unfair to say when this is the focal point, your franchise player, like, you kind of need a little bit more, and the expectations are higher for him than they would be for, like, Miles Straw or Nathan Lucas, for example, as much as their contributions on the whole of the season have been very important. But, yeah, I mean, to Russ's point about the general overview of what's up ahead for the Blue Jays, day off tomorrow, three in Cleveland, three in Boston at Fenway, and you come back home for four against the Yankees here at the Rogers Center, including on Canada Day. I mean, you just need more from everyone, right? Like, I think if you were to list the biggest positive for the Blue Jays today, I think the biggest two for me would be Chris Bassett's outing and Bo Bichette. I mean, he was the only one who scored any runs for this team today. So I essentially, that's it. I'm not sure anyone else is going to get, like, that much praise from me today.
No, and we should take a moment to praise Chris Bassett because it was one of the better outings we've seen from him in a while. And it's easy to say, okay, well, it's the White Sox, so who cares? And there's something to that. But he got seven strikeouts. That's a number he hasn't touched since April. So that's a notable number for him. He's not generally a huge, huge strikeout pitcher. So he's making guys miss. He's also really establishing the hard stuff, whether that was a sinker or the cutter or the four-seamer. I think his first 23 pitches, I have it here, 19 of them were kind of fastballs of one type or another. So he came out and he was firing those fastballs, and the velo on all of them were up. Now, when you're talking about Chris Bassitt, the up is in a specific context. We're still talking about, you know, 92 or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But when guys have to worry about the 75-mile-an-hour curveball, again, it's a bit of a different context. So his stuff looked a little bit better than usual. He really controlled the game well. And, you know, giving up a single run, like, you feel pretty strongly like you're going to win that outing, especially against a not particularly good team that you hope that your lineup's going to be able to score against. Obviously, that's not how it played out. But Bassitt, now, you know, the last sort of four starts or so have been pretty good, and you're starting to feel like he's back on track after, you know, at the end of May, he had two starts in a row where he gave up five earned runs, and it seemed like he was really in the middle of a funk. And I don't know if you want to say the funk's officially over, but there's a little bit more confidence there that he's back in sort of that consistent groove you're hoping for with him, where you see him as sort of a third starter type.
Yeah, the only real blip today from Bassitt was in that fourth inning, right? I mean, he loads the bases with one out, and this comes after the first time through the order. He struck out five of the first nine batters, essentially batters one through nine. He was getting guys with the cutter, the sinker, the sweeper. Like, he was registering strikeouts on all of those pitches. The second time through, you know, the White Sox batters were a little more patient. He, you know, we talk about that sinker, one of his better pitches, the pitches he relies on, one of the pitches at least he relies on the most. And while he was locating it well in the first three innings, a little less so in the fourth inning. But then, you know what, it didn't really burn him too much because he did pick it back up in the fifth and sixth. But ultimately, it is definitely a positive for a guy that has had an up-and-down season, like I think you could probably describe for many of the Blue Jays starters, specifically Bassitt, Berríos, and Gausman. But, yeah, I mean, I'm not sure there's a lot negative to say about Chris Bassitt. That's for sure.
Yeah, it might be an oversimplification, but when you don't give up a single extra base hit, that's a good outing, pretty much exclusively, and he only walked a single batter. So the mistakes that pitchers that really hate, that burns them up, or is when they walk too many guys and when they give up that big hit, whether it's one that leaves a park or sort of a big double with men on base or something like that. I think a lot of guys can live with the ball got through the infield, the guy hit a little soft liner that's going to drop and be a hit 100% of the time. Like, these things just kind of happen. So all of the things that happen for Bassitt in a negative way are just sort of the cost of doing business as a starting pitcher, and he didn't make any of those truly nasty mistakes that keep you up at night.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go out east to Halifax. Morgan joining us from Halifax. Welcome to Jays Talk, Morgan. What's on your mind?
How's it going, guys?
Good, man. What do you want to talk about today?
Yeah, first things first, I'd like to know Jimenez there. In the fifth, we had one out, and I like to know why the runners were sent on contact there. It didn't make a whole lot of sense to me, especially when we have a guy like Bo Bichette coming up at the top of the order here next straight. It's you see a Roden hits into first, and then our runners are sent on contact. So I'm just not too sure what the thinking was there, because if that goes differently, we have two runners in scoring position, two out with Bo up, right? And we saw what happened there next. Additionally, I don't mean to beat a dead horse, but I think it's probably time to move on from Hoffman in the closing role. You got a guy like Yariel Rodriguez who's going out there and shoving on a nearly day-to-day basis. I just don't know why at this point. It doesn't even need to be Yariel Rodriguez. It can be anybody, right? I think going back to Jeff Hoffman it just isn't smart. He's been inefficient, and I think it's time we stop seeing him in these high-leverage situations, but I want to know what you guys think about that.
Sure, yeah, Morgan, appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us. I think, I do think, like, in terms of what Morgan said at the very end, like, stop seeing Hoffman in high-leverage situations, I do think, like, even if they were to, like, quote-unquote, remove him as the team's closer, Nick, I gotta think you would still probably see him in, like, relatively speaking, high-leverage situations. You know what I mean? Like, they're not going to just take him from being the team's closer with this amount of money he's being paid. And I know people hear that, and you're like, okay, well, it shouldn't matter. The money shouldn't matter. It should be about results, which I do agree with, like, on principle. But that is how it works, right? So I got to think they wouldn't just take him from being the closer to being, like, the fourth-inning guy when as in mop-up duty, for example, right? Or in the lowest-leverage spots. You're probably still going to see him just flip-flop, essentially, with one of Jimmy Garcia or Yariel Rodriguez, if that is what they decide to do, right? Like, I got to imagine, in some order, even if it's not always Hoffman, when Jimmy Garcia is healthy, it's Y-Rod Jimmy Hoffman in some fashion, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, this is also a player you've made a three-year financial commitment to. Again, people don't like to hear about salary, but when you have a plan for a guy, and we're less than halfway through season one, right? And I understand that people are sick of these blow-ups, they don't like to see it, but if you thought that this was enough for you to not believe in the player, like a struggling for, you know, his April's really good, right? So struggling for 6 weeks is enough to make you not believe in the player. You probably wouldn't have believed in them enough to bring them on a three-year contract in the first place, right? Like, no one is higher on Jeff Hoffman than the Toronto Blue Jays. That's why they were the ones who signed him in free agency. So I know a lot of people are giving up on him, but this is still a very talented guy. And it is possible. I could see a world where he is not sort of a capital C closer at some point. Like, his time in Philadelphia over the last couple of years, when I think, again, it is accurate to say he was one of the very best relievers in all of baseball, he wasn't really the closer then. He would save the occasional game, but he was more of a fireman. Sometimes he would do a little bit of a multi-inning thing. He'd come in big spots. He'd come in the eighth. That is an option where they can still get value out of him and his contract. He doesn't necessarily have to be a traditional closer for that to work. But as frustrated as I think most people and fans are with Hoffman, I think it's worth understanding that this is an organization that profoundly believes in this guy, or they wouldn't be here in the first place.
You think if this continues, these struggles continue, and maybe we're at this point already, but even when Jimmy Garcia comes back and you still have Yariel Rodriguez, Sandlin looked good and then he kind of lost command late in this one. Braden Fisher could be something. I name all of these names to say, do you think this team could entertain, you know, a trade or an acquisition of some kind for another high-leverage reliever? Because I'm sure that's on everyone's minds these days.
I'm not sure that they see it as a weakness. And that sounds weird today because we all saw it happen with Jeff Hoffman, but you just mentioned that they have other guys that they can use, whether it's Garcia returning, whether it's Yariel Rodriguez. You have to feel very good about Brendan Little. Every team that's contending can benefit from adding a quality high-leverage reliever, so it's not like they won't even entertain that idea. But I think they probably see a lot of the bullpen as one of the bigger strengths of this team. And, yeah, even if guys like Sandlin and Fisher, if they get into the mix in terms of being trustworthy later in games, which is a possibility, then that opens up their options a little bit more. The rotation is still such an issue with the team that there's only so much trade chips you can throw around, and that's probably the biggest concern at this point, even with the wobbles that we've seen from Hoffman.
Can I read you a John Schneider quote from his post-game availability today? This is John Schneider on Jeff Hoffman just about 10 minutes ago. "We trust the bleep out of Jeff Hoffman. I do. It's easy to point the blame at him, but he's been on the other side of us winning a whole lot of games. It's a tough stretch for him, but we'll know he'll come out of it." That, to me, does not read like someone, a manager or a team, preparing to remove him from that closing role. That's how I read that. I don't know if you read that differently.
I think it would be a very bizarre way to message, "We are removing you from the closer role." I think the closest thing we might see to this happening is sort of soft launching using other guys in certain cases. Like, there's multiple dangerous lefties, so maybe we'll use Brendan Little because that's the best matchup. Or maybe Hoffman threw the previous day and he threw kind of 20 pitches
right.
And it's like, instead of forcing the issue of making sure you're the closer, we're going to put in Yibby Garcia because we feel better about him fresh than you potentially a little bit fatigued. I think those are the sort of things around the edges you might see, as opposed to the Jeff Hoffman, "We are no longer going to use you in the ninth inning."
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Eddie in Fort Erie. Eddie, what's up today?
Not much, Joe and Nick. Thanks for taking my call as always, guys.
Yeah, no problem. What's on your mind today?
Well, you know what? I'm with you. I want to see Rodriguez in the closer spot because, you know what, he's really come a long way since last year. And you know what? What's crazy about it was that his command was terrible in the spring, right? And he obviously got lit up on opening day, you know, when he was trying to stop the bleeding and not having to, use the bullpen even more, right? But whatever it is, like he's really done well, and I think he deserves another shot at the I think he deserves a shot at the closer. And you know what? Just hearing what John Schneider said, I'm sure, like, about how he trusts Hoffman.
Right.
I mean, I would have a short leash on that because, you know what, you can only get so much voter confidences for so long, but if you don't produce, then they're going to have to think about taking Hoffman out of there. That's how I look at it. And you know what? One of the callers mentioned about the series with the Guardians. I totally agree. I mean, you've got to, like, if not win the series, you got to sweep that series because, you know what? They took 2 out of 3 from the Blue Jays, and you got to sweep that series. And obviously it won't be easy, but that's how I look at it. And you know what? The one series I'm looking at, it like out of the two with the Red Sox and them and the Guardians, is the Red Sox because you know what? They look free and easy after the whole Devers trade took place just last Sunday. Like, I was keeping an eye on their game against their series with Seattle. They did pretty good winning 2 out of 3 and, you know, having this series with the Giants with a lot of emotion, you know, for Devers and that sort of thing. But so that's the one, like, those are very, very important. So I really hope that the Blue Jays rebound, which they have done, but they really are going to have to rebound against these two teams because, you know, you got to win the season series and you're also trying to get to the division too, you know?
Sure. No, that's true, Eddie. I appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk. Yeah, I do think, I mean, as far as Yariel Rodriguez goes, who we've talked about a lot today, but I do think, Nick, that at the very least with Y-Rod, whether or not he becomes the team's new closer or whether or not he just gets more closing opportunities, generally speaking, save opportunities, I do think this is his job now, though. You know, we talk about in this, do the Blue Jays need to go get a starting pitcher at the deadline? What's the priority? Deadline, starting pitcher, a reliever, a bat. And I still think it's a starter even after today. But generally speaking, a lot of people have texted in to say, hey, like, why don't you just make Y-Rod a starter again? I think what we've seen so far this season does underline the idea that he is at his most effective when he is a reliever. And I don't expect that to change at the very least.
Even when they signed him, they were willing to try him as a starter, and they thought that that was a possibility. But generally speaking, the consensus was it was an experiment.
Right.
That they knew what he had done in Japan as a high-leverage reliever, and they thought, well, we'll try him as a starter because always the upside of the amount of impact a player can have as a starter is almost always higher than as a reliever. So we might as well see what he can do as a starter, and we can fall back on this relief plan. And then early this season, there was a little bit of worry because he did not come out of the gate strong. And it's like, oh, we all assumed that he would be a good reliever. That was the backup plan. And now he's just not looking good in that role either. Obviously, you know, it's kind of the timing of it being sort of the beginning of May. He found a new gear and he is showing the team that he is not just a capable reliever. He is a multi-inning threat. He is a high leverage worthy guy. And that's got to be of great comfort to them because they're, you know, there's always a little bit of a question when you bring a guy across from a foreign league. Can he do the same thing that he did in Japan in the major leagues? And that's basically what he's doing now. And you're right. You generally don't want to mess with success, right? When the Jays moved Vladdy to first base, for instance, away from third base where he had struggled initially in his MLB career, then he started really hitting at first base. And he ended up getting in better shape and becoming more athletic. And there was an argument, oh, do you want to move him back to third base? And people thought, you know what? Things are working out now the way it is, so let's just stay the course. And that's sort of the situation here. Things are working out the way they are, so the best thing the Jays can do with Rodriguez is just stay the course and keep him in the bullpen.
Before we take one more call and then hit a break, let's hear a little bit from John Schneider himself. He did, of course, as we just mentioned, talk about Jeff Hoffman and how this series went. A frustrating one, certainly, a series loss for the Blue Jays. But let's hear the skipper. He just wrapped up his media availability a couple minutes ago.
It's tough to tell, you know. It's the roller coaster ride of a reliever, you know. I thought today just, you know, I think he's probably caught in between a little bit of wanting to get back to the dominant form he showed the first month and a half or so. And just being frustrated with not getting the results, you know. So it happens. We trust the shit out of Jeff Hoffman. You know, I do. And it's easy to point blame at him. He's been on the other side of us winning a whole lot of games. So It's a tough stretch for him, but we know he'll come out of it, and we got a lot of faith in him.
Yeah, again, that does not sound like the voice of a man who is prepared to not have Jeff Hoffman closing games for them. That's John Schneider speaking to the media a couple minutes ago. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to the phones, and let's go to Jen in Toronto. Jen, what's up?
Hi.
Hey, Jen.
I'm going to avoid the whole Hoffman targeting. My whole thing is, like I said to the producer, Uriel pitched on Wednesday. He's hardly given up any runs in, like, a month and a half. He threw, like, a measly 9 or 10 pitches yesterday. He mowed down the order today. I think everyone in the stadium was shocked when he didn't come out for the 8th. The more bullpen people you use, the more chance one of them will go wrong. For the life of me, is it because they have a day off tomorrow? People are joking on Twitter that Schneider is going to go through 5 or 6 bullpen. They said that in the 7th.
Hey, Jen, yeah, appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us. I think it was, 5 pitches for Rodriguez yesterday, 10 today. So, yeah, I mean, 15 pitches, even though he got hot in 2 games essentially ahead of a day off, I think backs up the point that you probably could have used Yariel Rodriguez for a little bit more. But, yeah, I think that does, again, that speaks to what we've been talking about for basically the whole show so far, which is that I think a lot of people ultimately, from Jen's call, from a lot of the text that we'll get to on the other side, Nick, it's just a lot of people seem to have more confidence in Yariel Rodriguez, and it's hard not to, right? Beyond that one game where, what was it? Was it a 3-run shot, or he gave up a home run or something? But there was a big moment in which he did get got. But for the most part, for a good chunk of the season, he has been one of the most reliable relievers on this entire ball club. So I would support him just getting a little bit more run.
It does go to show how reliably he's been and how much the belief in him has grown, sort of even from the fan base, that, you know, Jen referred to the expectation. Oh, he'll just come out for the next inning, obviously. And I think we felt that to some degree as well. And that's generally not how it works. Like, most of the time, especially when you have a day off coming and you have a fresh bullpen, guys kind of go inning, okay, next guy inning, especially with the 3-batter rule. And we kind of have been spoiled and gotten used to the idea of, like, oh, yeah, Yariel will just bite off 2 innings here and shut down the other team. And that's sort of become the expectation. And, again, I think that really speaks to how well he's pitched over the last 6-7 weeks or so, that he's just made that routine, just pitching a couple scoreless innings like it's nothing, because there aren't a lot of guys in the major leagues who can do that with any regularity.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Those are the numbers to call if you want to leave us a message, drop us a line live on the air. The phone lines are open. 590-590, name and location. That's the People's Text Line. A whole bunch of texts here that we haven't gotten to. So let's take that break, Nick. Let's come back. We'll take a look at the text line, take a look at any calls, and we'll also check out the Bet365 standings update as well. Still lots for us to get to. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk. That's Nick. I'm Sho. We're back in a flash on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Yeah, it was good. You know, it was kind of like a little 2 upside, and, you know, kind of the second part of it was kind of focusing on the lineup he probably will see in Cleveland. And I know he's talked to a couple of you guys. It's just, you know, he's ready to go, you know, and it's, I know the thumb is a thing, you know, it's a real thing. And I think that getting to 75 pitches in his last start is a good thing, and we got to just monitor it as he goes. But, you know, the fact that he's feeling good throwing, you know, his stuff, he knows his stuff is where it should be. So really, really excited to have him back. That's a huge, huge, obviously, addition to us. You know, it's Max Scherzer. You know, I'll take that any day of the week.
Schneider talking, of course, as you just said, about Max Scherzer, who officially will be getting the start on Wednesday. John Schneider did confirm that in his media availability today. So there you go. Scherzer starting the second game of a 3-game series against the Guardians in Cleveland. Welcome back to Blue Jays Talk, of course. Sho Ali here with you alongside Nick Ashbourne. We are here for another 15, 16 minutes or so. So still some time to give us a call. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590. 0590, star 590 on your cell. Go back to the text line as well, 590-590, name and location. Before we do that, though, let's check in on the Bet365 standings update. At Bet365, you can bet live in-game or on-game props, totals, and the money line. Download the app and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365, 19+, play responsibly, Ontario only. So let's check out these final scores, Nick. I believe the Red Sox game is still going on. Yeah, it's top of the fifth inning. The Giants are leading the Red Sox 2-1 after winning yesterday 3-2. You do have a compare finals, though, in the American League East. We have the Detroit Tigers beating the Tampa Bay Rays 9-3, the final score. There was a rain delay in that game for like 20 minutes, essentially. And then, but at that point, the Tigers were up, I think, 8-1. So it was a pretty big win for the Tigers for a good chunk of the day. The Yankees did stage a comeback against the Orioles. They win 4-2. They were trailing 2-1, but late in that game, Jazz Chisholm Jr. with a two-run double off Brian Baker. I believe there was some news out of Orioles land pregame that Adley Rutschman has suffered an oblique strain, and so he is going to be out until at least the All-Star break. So they don't actually know when he's going to be back, but they're holding him out until the All-Star break so as to not aggravate that injury any further. And then we have the Red Sox game, of course, that is in action right now. So with all that in mind, the Yankees, they are 45-32 after their win. The Rays, after their loss, 43-35. The Blue Jays, after their loss, they're 41-36. They are 1.5 games back of the Rays, and they are 4 games back of the Yankees for the division. The Red Sox, mid-game right now, they are 40-38. They did lose yesterday. And the Baltimore Orioles, who of course lost to the Yankees, they are 33-44. If we look at the wild card standings, I know it's a little early to look at the wild card standings. So, you know, you do these standings with a grain of salt, certainly. But let's see. Still got the Yankees, Tigers, and Astros leading their respective divisions. The wild card, the Tampa Bay Rays, 43-35. The Blue Jays in the second wild card spot, 41-36. And the Red Sox still 40-38. So the Guardians are 38-37, as are the Mariners. So those are two teams, hence Russ's call to lead us off today, that you kind of need to stay ahead of. And it would be a big deal if you can go and take 2 or 3 from the Guardians at Progressive Field starting Tuesday.
Yeah, I think it's probably wisest to think of the Jays as more of a wild card threat than a division threat. Sure, you can monitor how close they are to the Yankees, but the Yankees do feel like the class of the AL East. And the more important games are going to be against teams like the Red Sox and the Guardians, the Mariners, the Royals, the Rays, these teams that are fighting for this wild card position, because those are teams where you need to be up, you know, a game, 2 games at the end of the season. Like, when you look at those standings, when the regular season wraps up, the difference between making the third wild card spot and being just out, it's often a game, 2 games. So this series that they're about to have against Cleveland, and then the next one coming up against the Red Sox, these could potentially be critical games for the fate of the Blue Jays season.
That's a quick check of the Bet365 standings update. But let's go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. And I see here a text from, so I told you we were going to get some of these texts about Vladdy. Chuck from Barrie, it is very simple. Vladdy is not and never will be a clutch hitter. When a first baseman makes the money he does and we are stuck with him, he needs to perform. Would have been a small loss if we didn't sign him. I don't know if I agree with that, Chuck, but I do think you do need more from Vladimir Guerrero Jr. Let's see, what else? There was a bunch of other ones here. Yeah, Alex in Ottawa, trying to be positive. Hopefully this will be a wake-up call for a team that has positioned themselves for a wild-card spot. They should know now that they can't afford to be complacent at the trade deadline. Let's see. Big picture, I'm not worried. From Forbes in Toronto, we're in a wild-card spot with really only 3 starters. While Santander has done nothing, Varsho has hardly played. They get those 2 back and going, and Vladdy regressing to the mean, Scherzer as well, and then a deadline ad or Manoah, and we're definitely in the playoffs. I want to say, you and I were looking at this yesterday. I think the Fangraphs playoff odds, which, you know, you can take those things with a grain of salt, I suppose, but I think yesterday, after the win, or maybe it was right before the win, had the Jays' odds at like 53% of just making the playoffs, right? Not winning the division, but making the playoffs, which, I mean, like, sounds about right for where we are in the season. I don't think that's like a doomer thing to say. It's just, there's so much baseball left to be played where so many aspects of this team are still relatively uncertain that I think having where we sit right now, and I haven't checked to see if that's dropped a little, I'm sure it has after a loss, but sitting at around a 50% chance to make the playoffs, I mean, that's like, sounds pretty reasonable, honestly, for a 41-36 team on June 22nd, I would say.
Absolutely. And I think entering the season, those odds probably would have been in the mid to high 30s, maybe low 40s%. So they've done good work to get to this point. They have banked the wins, but there's a long way to go. And there is so much uncertainty about this team, whether it is in the rotation and what Scherzer is going to give you and whether there's going to be a trade deadline acquisition that matters. That's very much up in the air. What can Santander give you? When is Dalton Varsho going to be back? Will he be able to stay healthy once he returns? Like, there's a million questions you could ask about this Blue Jays team, and that's normally the case when you're talking about a team that is an okay, good baseball team. Like, when you're the Los Angeles Dodgers, maybe you have one or two questions about what's on the roster, but for most of the teams who are living in sort of the squishy middle of baseball, like the Toronto Blue Jays,
a lot of teams, frankly,
that's where the Blue Jays are, and that's where a lot of teams are, and in that case, like, you are going to have weaknesses and doubts and questions. Doesn't mean that you're a bad baseball team, but it's really difficult to put together a 26-man roster where every single person is locked in and really, really good in their role and someone you can trust. It's a difficult task, and very few teams are able to do it. So there's a lot of questions as far as the Jays go from here on out.
Dale in Nova Scotia, don't put all the blame on Hoffman. There's no excuse for the team being offensively shut down two of three games against the White Sox. And when they do things like that, how can you take them serious? And then Rob in Woodstock, I know much of today's loss will fall on the bullpen, but Vladimir Guerrero Jr. had a great opportunity with the bases loaded to give the team a bigger lead. I feel like he has yet to have a clutch moment like Jose Bautista or Edwin Encarnacion. It seems he only produces when there's no pressure, and I'm curious your thoughts on that. At the very least, I think it's a valid point to say that, you know, when you think of iconic moments in Vladdy's career, like, what's the most iconic moment in Vladdy's career? Like, there was a home run, I want to say. I mean, gosh, this might have been a couple years ago at this point, but a home run here at the Rogers Center late in the game against the Yankees. And I remember he was rounding second base, and he's, like, pointing at the ground, like, this is my house. I think they lost that series, so don't quote me on that. I feel like that, but that just comes to mind. To Rob's point, I mean, in a general sense, beyond looking at specific moments, I do think you do need more from your biggest bats. I'm not sure I'm going to spend a lot of today crushing Bo, because he was pretty much the only one to produce, and he has been slugging a little bit better as of late, so you'll take that. But you need more from Vladdy, I think, in the biggest moments.
Weirdly, with Vladdy, his most iconic moment to me might be that home run he hit in Montreal.
Oh, the preseason game.
Which is a bit odd. And, like, I don't mean that as an indictment on him. That was just a really special moment based on his history. It is a complicated issue, because I'll agree with one thing. I'll agree with it. They need more from Vladdy than what they're getting. They're getting kind of 2022 Vladdy, who's a really good player, but not the sort of guy who is, you know, driving a lineup and carrying the team for weeks at a time. On the flip side, I also think that the idea that Vladdy doesn't come through and it matters is a really overrated narrative that has been overplayed, in my view, to be honest. And then you can say that he hasn't done anything in the playoffs. Cool, that's true. But we're also talking about six games spread out over three different years. And so I'm not really willing to take that much from that at this point. If you look at Vladdy's career OPS with the bases empty, 848. With men in scoring position, 847. He's the same guy. This season, he came into this game slugging 578 with men in scoring position, much better than he is overall. So I think we got it in our heads at some point, because every player fails in big moments. That's because hitting is about failure. The best players in the world get out the majority of the time. So we see a player fail in this big moment, and we really internalize it. But failure is kind of the expectation for a big league hitter, unfortunately. And so somewhere along the line, we got it in our heads that Vladdy just wasn't this player for big moments. And I don't think we know that yet. We're going to need to see him in the playoffs more. And maybe we'll see that this season. Maybe he will have that iconic moment that changes minds. But when you talk about, like, the raw numbers, the facts of the matter, he isn't someone who is consistently shrunken when there are guys in scoring position. Would have helped if in this game today he could have come up with a big hit. Absolutely, but I don't think that means that he's suddenly this guy who can't handle pressure at all.
Mike in St. John, how can you say Brendan Little has been reliable? His control is a liability. He's walking too many hitters. What I said was that he has been reliable for a good chunk of the season. Mike is not wrong, however. He walked a guy today. In the month of June, he has now walked six guys in, let's see, including today, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 outings. So, yeah, he's let in four – this is before today. He has let in four earned runs, five hits, seven in a third inning, six walks, 13 strikeouts, and then you add in what happened today. So, yeah, I think he has been a little shaky as of late. I mean, the truth is I think a lot of the guys who have been – apart from Yariel Rodriguez, frankly, a lot of the members of the bullpen who have been – pretty reliable for good chunks of the season have, I think, seen some dips. And I do believe it's because they're being absolutely redlined to a certain extent right now. I mean, Mason Fluharty has seen a little bit of dip after he had a very consistent stretch there. Certainly Brendan Little as well. I'm not sure it necessarily means that it's a failing on their part. But, I mean, I mentioned it before, like 36 outings for Brendan Little. That's like, I'm not sure that's sustainable. And when you can also, you're not sure what version of Nick Sandlin you're going to get. I was excited to see him. Get off. It was it's a spot you don't want to be in this game, certainly. But I was excited to see Sandlin come in and get two quick outs, and then he loaded the bases, right? So you kind of go back and forth with what you're seeing from Sandlin. And again, a small sample size since he's returned from a relatively long layoff off the IL. Braden Fisher, I believe there is something there. And I wonder if he starts to get a little bit more used in certain situations because he has been a little bit more reliable. But I think the truth is everyone, including Brendan Little, has seen a little bit of a dip in efficiency as of late.
With Little, I get it. The walks are a very real issue. Like, he's walking more than five guys per nine innings. So that is a legitimate weakness that he has. But we talked about with Hoffman, what is the job of a high-leverage reliever? The job is to keep the runs off the board. And right now he's sitting at a 2.10 ERA. And he's been literally one of the very best strikeout relievers in the entire game. So that's really compensating for the walks. And then even when guys put the ball in play, the ground ball rate is close to 60%. Right. So when you have that combination of some of the most strikeouts in the game and an elite ground ball rate, you can survive a few walks in a way that other pitchers can't. So I know that sometimes it might not be the most fun to watch when he's plodding through some at-bats if guys aren't chasing his stuff. But although he does have this weakness right now that should be recognized, it hasn't made him an ineffective pitcher because his other strengths are so important and so strong.
Dominic and Stouffville, are you guys not worried that they're playing over their heads? Maybe a little, honestly, like to a certain extent.
Yeah, there's some validity there. Sure.
Dominic says as well, their run differential does not support the current record. They're minus 10 after today in the run differential, by the way. They have to start blowing people out. The current roster does not support the offense needed. They may just as easily fall out of contention, which it looks like right now. I mean, look, I think it's easy to take that kind of look. I'm not saying Dominic is wrong. It's just that I think, you know, you lose 2 out of 3 to the White Sox. It does feel like a little bit like the Chicken Little. The sky's falling to a certain extent. And again, I mean, like, it's a bad series loss. There's no two ways about it. You cannot look at it any other way. But they had won a fair amount of games, I think, that has shown you some sustainable items about both the offense and the bullpen until this series, effectively, and certainly the Philly series as well, which was not great. So, yeah, I mean, I don't think I'm ready to say, like, there are way worse than a 41-36 record. But as you brought up earlier, Nick, I do think that, you know, you're kind of looking at things. You're looking at a team that is comfortably above 500, comfortably in a playoff spot, but also there are teams nipping at their heels and they can't necessarily afford to be complacent by any means.
It's really easy to look at a team with a negative run differential and say, these guys are frauds. And what I would say is that some of what the Jays have done might be fraudulent to an extent. There is an element of luck. But that doesn't mean what they're going to do in the future has to be that way. Like, you're talking about, for the vast majority of the season, one rotation spot has been held by Bowden Francis, who right. has been dismal until he was injured. That will be improved. You have potentially Max Scherzer coming back. You have Anthony Santander, who could be a big power boost. You, the Jays would hope, will get a lot more of Dalton Varsho, who's a big impact two-way player, than you did in the first half of the season. So I think the way to think about it is the Jays have banked quite a few wins despite, you know, quite a few things going against them.
Sure.
And in the second half, there's reason to believe that certain reinforcements, potential trade deadline acquisitions, maybe even a guy like Alek Manoah, they're going to get a boost that could make them a better team in the second half.
Before we get out of here, we got a couple minutes left. John Schneider did say this. If we look ahead a little bit to the Guardian series, so day off tomorrow, and then we have the series that starts on Tuesday in Cleveland. John Schneider gave us the rotation for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. So we already know that Scherzer starting on Wednesday. Eric Lauer is going to start this series. He's going to get the ball to start on Tuesday. Max Scherzer is going to start on Wednesday. Kevin Gausman will go, I guess, with an extra day of rest on Thursday. And so those are your starters lined up for that series, which I suppose that means for the Red Sox, you're going to get Bassett and Berríos for at least two of those three games in Boston, which is certainly a good thing given how they've played recently at the very least. But what do you think of Lauer getting that game on Tuesday? Because I got to think, if Lauer's going on Tuesday and Scherzer's going on Wednesday, there's a chance that, I mean, I think you can be more confident in Lauer because he's pitched a lot more. But, I mean, you got to think the bullpen's going to have to be needed in potentially in both of those games just in case, because neither of them have pitched that long into games so far this year. Now, that's not a criticism of Lauer at all. Lauer's been phenomenal. But the last game, I mean, he went five innings. He allowed four hits, one earned run, one walk, eight strikeouts. He threw 75 pitches. They're probably going to need a little bit more out of Lauer on Tuesday, I would imagine.
It's a big vote of confidence for Lauer.
For sure.
Because if your expected outcome for Lauer is more like three or four innings, and you really don't know what you're going to get from Scherzer, you could put your bullpen in a world of hurt. And so by throwing him out there before Scherzer, I think they're saying, we feel pretty good that this guy can give us five innings, which is not what you normally...
Maybe even more than five
potentially
innings.
Potentially even more from a guy that you signed to a minor league contract in the offseason. He's been an amazing story for the Blue Jays this season. And clearly, again, they have that level of confidence in him. They're willing to put him out there before Scherzer. And you know, this day off for the bullpen to rest is going to be critical for them to survive that stretch. But it shows that they're seeing Eric Lauer right now as a starter, not a bulk guy who happens to be starting.
Nick, this was a lot of fun, man. It's too bad it wasn't a more fun result today, certainly. But I do appreciate you being along with me. I guess we're back to do more Jays talks, not next weekend, but as we get into July, we'll be doing a lot more together.
Absolutely. It's always a pleasure to be here with you, even if the game itself could has a room for improvement. We'll put it
that way. Yes, that's a good way to put it. That is Nick Ashbourne. I'm Sho Ali. And a quick note for the giveaway winner for the Davis Schneider trivia yesterday. The answer was the Chicago White Sox, funnily enough. He had three RBI yesterday against the White Sox. His lone game in 2024, also against the White Sox in Chicago. Sean from Ottawa was our winner. So we'll continue doing the giveaways as we continue on this season. Blue Jays baseball brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Rust Control Centers in Niagara Falls and St. Catharines. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today. Your local Crown Rust Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Nick Ashbourne, Eric Smith, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, Christian Chiniti, I'm Sho Ali. That does it for us. We are out of here. Enjoy the day off tomorrow, everyone. Try and stay hydrated if you're in the GTA. It's a heat wave here right now. The heat dome, they're calling it. Enjoy game 7 of the NBA Finals tonight. Should be a good one. Blair and Barker, who I'm sure are also kicking back today, they will be back on Tuesday on Jays Talk, their regular show tomorrow as well. I'll be back next weekend with Julia Kreutz. Have a great weekend, everyone. We'll talk to you later.